Chris. Yo, yo, yo. That was fresh. Come with that next shit.
For African people, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God-goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour a libation too to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors we pour a libation, our shades. Pour a libation too to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization, and they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us so we would never forget. To those ancestors, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve. And at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent. Leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation too to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us, human resources. But they were enjoined by us in the diasporas, both objects of a global myopia that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that described them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation too to them because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists, the new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jalia. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation to those ancestors because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation, those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation too to our children and those yet to be born, for they are the ones that you must teach, and you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity, for they will call your name in all eternity. To our children we pour libation, ashe, ashe, asheo.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people what they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Good evening. I was a little early there. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the program. This is Charmian Penda. I'm your host. This is Straight No Chaser, about how to immigrate to Africa and keep your American roots. I'd like to welcome Dr. William Rogers, who is the executive producer of the Black Reality Think Tank Radio Network. So welcome again. Thank you to all of you who are tuning in from United States and possibly around the world. It's 6 p.m. your time, Central Standard Time. It's 12 a.m. my time. Now, as customary on the Black Reality Think Tank, we always provide an ancestral profile of our great leaders of the past. And today's profile is Queen Nandi, the mother of the great Shaka Zulu. Nandi, meaning sweet one, was the daughter of an Nkosi of Elangeni, who was born around 1760. But there are some accounts that say she was born in 1766. Sounds like I have a little bit of a delay there. Sorry about that. But moving on, a side that is not often told is that Nandi was one of the greatest single parents who ever lived. When confronted with animosity, rejection, insults, and humiliation, she raised her son Shaka to have strength of will, believe in his destiny, and never give up. She raised him also to believe in the power of unity and in the concept, we are the same. She devoted her life to protecting her son Shaka and his siblings the best she knew how. Nani tried to hide her pregnancy because, quote unquote, the fun of the rose, that's what they called it, was not allowed. And when she began to show signs of her pregnancy, the Elangeni sent word to her companion, Senzakona, and the Zulu tribe that Nandi was expecting. The Zulu replied that the girl was not pregnant and had probably been bitten by the Ishaka beetle, hence the monthly irregularity. Needless to say, Shaka was born, but because he was born out of wedlock, Nandi was humiliated and rejected. But she would go on to refer to Shaka as her little blazing fire. Although Nandi withstood the denigration from the women of the Elangeni, she pressed on. She was resilient, and she never succumbed to the pressure because she knew her worth. And she also instilled these values into her son. Nandi always reminded her son that despite his circumstances, he would one day be king. There were times, however, when Nandi was unable to put food on the table, especially during the great food shortage of 1802, and that period was known as eat and be quiet, because people were not prepared to share food because of its scarcity. And so in order to provide for Shaka and his siblings, sometimes she had to travel long distances on foot. But Nandi also exercised a great deal of influence over the affairs of the kingdom during Shaka's reign. She, with other women, were put in charge of military kraals and given power to govern in his absence. But more importantly, Nandi was a force for moderation in Shaka's life. At times, she suggested political compromises rather than encouraging violent action. And through her standing beside Shaka, the kingdom grew leaps and bounds in just a short period of 12 years. So it's understandable that King Shaka held women in high esteem because he understood their power and resilience. And because women are about more than giving birth and raising children, Nandi is not only important because she gave birth to a great leader, Shaka Zulu, but because of her strong will, resilience, and setting an example to millions of women not to settle for less. That was your ancestral profile on Queen Nandi, the mother of Shaka Zulu. So I'm so excited to share my experience today with you all in the motherland. And really the purpose of this show is to give you insight that you might not already have on immigrating to Africa while keeping your American roots, you know, keeping yourself intact. But in addition, I also believe that in all of our actions, we should be purposeful. We should be responsible for those who came before us, our ancestors, and be responsible to those who will follow us, our descendants. And as a community, we should strive to make it our collective duty, the building and developing of our community in order to restore our greatness. So, thank you for tuning in today. The call line is 215-490-9832. As the call lines light up, I'll be happy to take questions, and let's just have a conversation, a back and forth. I don't want to give you a lecture on anything. I want you to be able to ask all of the questions that you've had about Africa that you've never been able to ask, and I'll answer them as best I can. And if not, I can also share my email at the end of the program, and we can continue the conversation or the dialogue after. So who am I, actually? My name is Charmian Penda. I'm a Milwaukee native. My mother grew up in Milwaukee. My grandmother grew up in Milwaukee. My dad is from Chicago, but he grew up most of his life in Milwaukee as well. So we're Milwaukee folks. I had a wonderful childhood, really, with the occasional dysfunction. But listen, nobody gets out of here unscathed, okay? We've all been through it. But I basically had a very, very good upbringing. I was a Chapter 220 kid. I was enrolled in all sorts of lessons. I played for the Natatorium with the Project Respect Basketball League. Some of you older folks may remember that. And I was always surrounded by and supported by my family. And one of my earliest memories was going to the Malcolm X Center with my grandmother. I love that. It was located on 3rd and Center, which is now MLK Jr. Drive now. MLK Jr. Drive, if I'm not mistaken. But I felt such pride there at my young age. I had to be 5 or 6, but I was always just very proud to walk up in the Malcolm X Center because it meant something. You know, I knew that that was a Milwaukee landmark back then, and I was a part of it. And my mother, she was conscious, but she was also conscientious about who we were as people, about blackness. But that consciousness contradicted the feelings that I would feel of otherness during my school days. So attending suburban schools, you know, it was a blessing and it was a curse. It was a blessing because of the curricula and the exposure to worldly ideas. But it was a curse because the community where I attended school made it painfully clear that our, meaning the handful of black students who attended those schools as well, that our presence was barely tolerable. And so, you know, the sneers and glares and willful ignorance during Black History Month, when the teacher draws on a lesson from slavery, and everyone, teacher included, turns around and looks at you with limitless contempt, waiting for an explanation. And I'm looking back like, I'm only 6. I'm getting the news that you're getting it. What do you want me to say? You know, but all I could do is shoot back a defiant glare and turn my lip up and hold it. But I really didn't know what to do, right? I really didn't know what to do to right that wrong. So that is that's a little bit of my background as far as growing up in Milwaukee. And I will always claim my Milwaukee roots no matter how far away I go. So our topic today, though, is really not so much about me. It's about me and my experience in Cameroon. And so some of you may know where Cameroon is, but some of you may not. Excuse me, in case you don't. It is situated on the western, we call it the armpit. So there's a little indentation. If you look at a map of Africa, you'll see that little indentation on the west coast. And there is a triangular-shaped country, which is Cameroon. Now, Cameroon is particular because it has an awesome landscape. And Cameroon is actually considered Africa in miniature size because of its rich topographical diversity. So there are mountains here, and there are forests, which people like to call jungle. I get it. Grasslands, desert terrain in the north. So oftentimes people ask, well, are there animals? Do you see animals in Cameroon? In the north, there are wildlife reserves, but at this time, that is an area of conflict and war. And so, no, I have not been. No, I don't plan on going. I mean, if things ever calm down in that area, if I get the opportunity, I will take it. But for now, it is off limits. But Cameroon also has a coastal area. And so I live in Douala. Douala is one of the major cities of Cameroon, and it is also the economic capital of Cameroon. So this is where a lot of business takes place, and a lot of the tourism comes through Douala. This is also a port city, so you can understand why a lot of business takes place here. Cameroon has two official languages, but more than 200 dialects. French and English are used in schools and in government, and is clearly a remnant of French colonization. Germany, Portugal, and Great Britain, they have also left indelible touches in Cameroon, and it can be felt throughout society. But there is a particular premium placed on French culture and civilization. As far as the government is concerned, Cameroon is a democratic republic and is presided by His Excellency Paul Biya, who has been in office for more than 30 years. Now, I know you're thinking, that is absolutely scandalous, 30 years in office, and it is. But I want you to keep in mind that when you're critiquing, you know, African nations as they develop, that they are relatively young democracies. You know, many of them gained independence around 1953, 4, 5, 1960. So they have a way to go. So we are patient with these developing countries, and we are no longer calling them underdeveloped countries or third world countries, because that term is pejorative. So that gives you a little bit of an overview on Cameroon. Cameroon also has a very interesting geographic situation because it is surrounded by five other countries, and this region is called the CEMAC zone, and that stands for the monetary zone that these five countries are a part of. So for someone looking to do business in Cameroon, it may be easier for them to do business in one or some of the surrounding countries. So there you get more bang for your buck. I mean, you're coming all of this way. You want to see if you can't enter more than just one market. So keep that in mind. Also, excuse me, I'll touch on this a little bit later. Africa is just on the brink of a African continental free trade agreement, which means that if successful, all of the countries of Africa will now start to open their borders and trade with each other, which is fantastic because it will give an opportunity to some of these markets to get products and services that, you know, have not been within reach. And it will also significantly reduce the need to depend on trade with Europe and the West. Can I get an amen? Okay. So that's a little bit about the economic situation. But I wanted to jump right into literacy and school. Literacy and school, and I'll tell you why in just a minute. But the literacy rate in Cameroon is high. Cameroonians are smart, connected, and hip. They listen to the music you listen to. They wear the styles you wear. And they imitate our culture to a T, sometimes to a fault. In other words, baggy pants, you know, name brand showing and all. Basketball has become a very popular sport. And I can tell you that these brothers can hoop. We have a basketball court in our yard, and I have to say it, they got skills. They really got skills. But back to literacy, as I was saying, so there are several types of schools, and I'm speaking to potential families who may be interested in immigrating, you know, who have kids and their school-age children. What are your options? So you have local bilingual. Remember, French and English are co-official languages. So you have local schools that are bilingual. Some of them are public. Some of them are private. You have French National. And this is a school that, you know, French expats who work for French companies here will send their kids to. You have African Center, which has an African Center curriculum and focus. You have the American School, or what they call the American School, which is traditional American. And that's probably the kind of school that you would be most familiar with. There's a Russian school. There is a Turkish school. I mean, there are all sorts of schools popping up. But the difference between those schools, you know, comes down to fees, curriculum, physical plant, and then accreditation for college admission. And so most of those schools, you know, take you through the 12th grade and then with the TOEFL or the IB, International Baccalaureate, they can apply for college admission. Our children attend a local bilingual school. The fees for that school per child are about $600. So, you know, we can deal with that. When you compare that to the traditional American school, the cost is about $15,000 USD per student. Now, with four kids, I would be looking at $60,000 USD for 12 years of schooling, approximately, for four kids. I mean, that's just an astronomical amount of money. So we decided that the local bilingual school would be just fine. And here's why. The curriculum is solid. I obviously don't like that there isn't an African-centered approach because there is a very heavy French influence, and the foundation of it is basically a French school. But these are French schools, but these are African kids who attend. So obviously they learn a lot of, you know, history and French language, obviously. But I like the part that helps parents in raising children. So they're very strict. They wear uniforms, and they're just expected to, you know, toe the line and later on in life stand up and be somebody. So, you know, there are no cell phones. You're definitely not showing up chewing gum. Talking back is absolutely positively not even an option. There are still some schools who do corporal punishment, which I believe is, you know, really outdated. I mean, we have better tools now. We know better. We don't need to do that. But apparently, for some of these kids, it works. Now, there's another thing that I forgot to mention is boarding school. This is an option a lot of parents avail themselves to. And as early as 8 or 9 years old, they ship their kids off to some boarding school, you know, 6 or 7 hours away. Some may even be in the city. But for me, the idea of boarding school was just not appealing at all. I've always felt like, you know, when you have children, you want to spend as much time with them and educate them your way, you know, for as long as you can. 8 or 9 years old, by the time they come back to you, you know, they've already been formed. So, and the conditions there are also very harsh. You know, their meals are just very basic, you know, beans, rice, fufu, very simple, you know, seasonless. But, and waking up at 4 a.m., you know, cold showers, those sorts of things, extreme rigor. But they say that, you know, that is good for the children. It helps with discipline. It definitely helps with understanding social order and hierarchy, which I believe when you compare it to what our kids are experiencing in the U.S., they need more of that social order and hierarchy, maybe not to the degree that they do in Cameroon, but I think that's definitely a missing element. You see, because whatever is happening at the school, you know, within reason, it is also being supported at home. So it's very difficult for kids to complain about what's happening at school or single out a teacher and complain about what's happening, you know, or maybe they're spending time at an aunt or an uncle's. Everyone is on the same page. Everyone is on the same page. And when you have that solidarity with parents across the board, you know, you can be sure that your child is going to get a pretty consistent upbringing because the values are identical wherever they go, be it school, be it at home, and even in the community. It's very hard to act up and act out, even in public, because it just goes against what the expectations are of children. And remember, people move and they do things with their family name in mind and with their family legacy in mind. So, you know, kids kind of understand I'm not just representing myself, this individual. I am from the family of, you know, X, Y, and Z. And so I need to conduct myself in a manner that is congruent with, you know, my family's good name. So let me give you that phone number again, just in case we have some callers, somebody wants to ask a question. It is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Moving right along. We were talking about literacy at school. That was our major header there, but I want to go back to young people because this is my concern. This is actually what is driving all of my activities and thoughts. You know, young people in Cameroon and in Africa really are the majority. So you have this whole continent, about 40%. If you take the average, young people make up about 40% of the population on the continent. And they're broke. And they're hopeless. Because a lot of the leaders here, and a lot of our leaders, have failed. They failed because they refused to grow and really recognize and propose solutions, you know, jobs. There really isn't a push and encouragement of entrepreneurship. And one of the things that I tell young people when I get a chance to talk to them here is that when you look at a Steve Jobs or you know, Bill Gates, you know, those tech guys, they are obviously intelligent. But I think one of the reasons why we have so many bright minds come out of the U.S. is because the U.S. really encourages innovation and creativity and, you know, incubating ideas. So when those guys were on their college campuses, I mean, they were encouraged to come up with these future solutions. They were encouraged to think outside the box and, you know, think beyond and see around corners. Whereas here, the focus is a little less on higher order thinking skills. You know, school systems are really built around rote learning, memorization, not enough critical thinking, synthesis, analysis, evaluation, those sorts of things that kind of help you create knowledge from existing knowledge, even though it said we're not creating anything new. You know, you just put in a different spin on it, but maybe we should use the word innovate. I mean, now you are starting to see it a little bit, but education-wide, I don't really see a modern, you know, a modern update to the curricula, the way that they're thinking about what does the economy need? What will be needed in the future? If you're teaching from textbooks that are 50 years old, then you're not going to get people who are ready to work. You're not going to get creative minds. You're not going to get people who, I mean, massively, you're not going to get huge numbers of, you know, people that are even relevant to the workforce. And then you couple that with no strategy to create employment for all of these young people. So all of that to say, you know, it's even more important than ever to use our platform to pour positivity and knowledge into them. It's the 21st century, and I would love to see connections start to happen to dispel the myths and stereotypes that we hold about this. And if we make it a priority to tune in to what's happening on the continent and what's happening in the States, I believe a massive awakening would occur. A massive awakening. You know, not to mention the economic power we could wield if we decided to do business with each other. Now, wherever we are, wherever we are, it stated that the Black Americans have $1 trillion worth of spending power. $1 trillion. That is an astronomical figure. I can barely wrap my head around it. And when you compare that to the potential economic power of Africa, well, that's a sum that I don't think we don't even know what that number is yet. We don't even know what that number is yet. But where are we directing this economic power? What are we doing with it? Where is it going? Because if we had a clear plan and agenda, then we wouldn't have to be reading or listening to the statistics on, you know, terrible birth rates, these incarceration rates, low literacy rates, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We would have our own institutions to be able to remediate on some of this. So this is an area where, you know, if we come together and come up with tangible and practical solutions, I think we can see some improvement in a relatively short amount of time. So all that to say that I'm no longer hoping Africa will, excuse me, emerge in our lifetime. I'm expecting it. I'm expecting it. And I think it will. And so to go back to the trade agreement that I mentioned before, this trade agreement will also kickstart a possible United States of Africa. And this is what Kwame Nkrumah had in mind. And the United States of Africa, excuse me, will potentially have one currency. So before I talk to you about the monetary zone, the CBAC region where Cameroon is and five other countries that share the same money, but there are a couple of different zones all over the continent. So that would be like if the East Coast had their own money, the West Coast had their own money, the North, the South all had, you know, different currencies as opposed to just using the U.S. dollar or the African dollar or give it some other name. So that's something that that I'm looking forward to, and that would also mean a one centralized banking system, you know, one foreign policy, one military. So these things are very exciting, and I hope that African can come to an agreement, because it's tough to do when you have so many colonial legacies at play. You know, you have Portuguese, former colonies, French former colonies, German former colonies, British former colonies, and obviously some independent nations. But these things still are very, very prevalent, and it's hard to get out of the box of thinking from a colonial perspective. But I tell you, when that day comes, it's going to be something special. It really is. It's going to be something special. So we're going to open up the phone line.
Before you do
Dr.
that,
Dr. Rogers, do we have any callers on the line?
Ms. Pender, before you do that, I just want to make a quick statement to our audience. To let them know that I do see some blinking of the internet. Just want to let them know we are broadcasting from the Cameroon, and there are possibilities sometimes that we may lose connection. If you do, I'd like to say to all of our listeners, just bear with us. We'll come right back on. But I do see some blinking, but so far so good. We haven't had any difficulty. We test the equipment prior to this. But anyway, I really appreciate some of the things that you are saying. Yes, we do have several people on that are potential callers, and we will open those lines when you're ready. But I do want to ask you, before the top of the hour, you got about 15 minutes before the top, you know, if you could just talk just a wee bit about the process of coming from America to make the Cameroon a home, or the possibility of a home. What is the process of that? How does that work? I know in your case, you were coming to start a family with your husband who was there. How does that work for someone, say, who didn't have it that way, just wanted to come and begin to build a life there? How is that done?
Okay, that's a really good question. That's true. First of all, I would suggest that, you know, if you haven't decided where to go, I mean, it's definitely worth researching every country in Africa, because they're very different, you know. People tend to approach Africa as though they're states and their nations. They have their various governments and cultures and traditions and languages and geographies and policies and things of that nature. And food, which is a real practical aspect. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I came to Cameroon. Cameroon has a wonderful, 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 you know, culinary experience here. It's just absolutely delightful. But you research your countries and you look at safety. You look at the ease of getting electricity, the ease of getting water, the ease of doing business, their school system, all of those things that I just mentioned, you know, if it's appropriate for you. But let's just take the case of Cameroon. Let's just say that I wasn't married to a Cameroonian and I chose Cameroon and this is where I decided to come. You would definitely want to get vaccinated. And I know that people have some issues around vaccines, and understandably so. And some people even have some religious issues against vaccines. But I've been here for 15 years, and I've had malaria maybe twice, which is pretty remarkable. My husband gets malaria every other month, it seems like. And it's not something that you want to have, and it's easy to be taken out by something like malaria because, you know, you can have a fever or you can have a headache and you may not think it's a big deal, and it may go untreated, and then next thing you know, you have a serious problem. So vaccinations are important. The vaccines for Cameroon required are, there isn't a malaria vaccine. There is a malaria vaccine. And yellow fever. And there may be, I think, a couple of other vaccines. You know what? I may be mistaken about the malaria vaccine. Don't quote me on it because it's been 15 years, so I'm really not that sure as far as that goes. But I know that you need a yellow fever vaccine, and you need a yellow fever vaccine even if you are on the continent traveling to other countries. And so it's so you don't want to find yourself, you know, unnecessarily sick here. So if you don't have any issues about taking vaccines against tropical diseases, then do so. Passport, before you actually do that, you get your passport, which usually takes about a month and a half to do. I think it costs about $150. It's pretty straightforward information, just personal information about who you are. They don't ask for any financial information or anything like that. It's very straightforward, and your passport will last 10 years. But in addition to the passport, you will need what's called a visa, not the credit card visa, but the visa that is put into your passport with specifications on which country you're traveling to. So some countries require a visa, some countries don't. Cameroon requires a visa. And the visa specifies how long you can stay in Cameroon before you have to come back. And I think the shortest amount of time you get is 3 months. There may also be 12-month visas. And people who are working in Cameroon, I think they usually get 12-month visas that you have to renew. Mm-hmm. And you have to pay for them, and it's probably less than $100. But you definitely need a visa for Cameroon and obviously a passport. And then once you get here, sometimes even as an American citizen, if you want to travel within the continent, you may have to get a visa for whatever destination that is. Like in South Africa, for example. If I was traveling to from Cameroon, South Africa, I would need a visa. And I think also Morocco and a few other places. So you got your passport.
Let me ask you, you were talking about the yellow fever and malaria and so forth. What is the healthcare system like in the Cameroon from your perspective? Because, you know, you obviously lived in Milwaukee and the medical system in America and the one in Africa. What is that? What is your assessment of it?
My assessment of the medical system here is it has vastly improved since I first came. And so, to give you an example, my mother-in-law had back surgery a couple of months ago. And they had the proper equipment. They had the properly trained doctors. Mm-hmm. The facilities was up to snuff. I mean, from A to Z. everything was what you would expect in America.
Okay.
She healed wonderfully, but it is true. I mean, there are two different worlds. The more you can afford better health care, the better health care you will get.
Mm-hmm.
That's just keeping it real.
Okay. So what is actually the official language? Did you say that? You may have said that before.
French.
What is the official?
Mm-hmm. French and English.
I'm sorry.
Both French and English.
Say it again.
Both French and English.
French and English. Okay. So, like for instance, say yes. The driver's license, is that in English or in French?
It depends on where you get it.
Okay.
So mine is in French. So this area, the Douala area where I live, this is pretty much a French-speaking zone. But
okay.
Because of, this is a French-speaking zone, but there are obviously what they call Anglophones or English speakers who live in this area too. But there are areas of Cameroon that are basically a majority, like 90%, you know, English speaking or French speaking. And so their government offices and business is done in English. So if they were getting driver licenses from, let's say, Baninda, then the driver's license would be in English.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, we want to definitely give our audience a chance to, I'm sure they've got plenty of questions to ask you. And we're going to open up the lines in a few minutes to do that. I just wanted to just say that, you know, our program tonight, the purpose of it tonight was to give Ms. Penda an opportunity to get ready to do her own broadcast coming up, hopefully, very soon. This is sort of a pilot run, and we are testing it out to see how she feels, what feels comfortable, and obviously with the reception that she gets from you, our audience. And so any suggestions that you have would be truly welcome. But we do want to bring the motherland into the American discussion, the table. We want to sit at the table together and talk about how we can do some things. And she was the head of the Chamber of Commerce for African-American business coming together. We want to talk about that just a little bit. And how is that possible? If some of you, for instance, have a business that you maybe think that you could be of some benefit and have some trade possibilities with Africa or vice versa, we wanted to talk about that. And she is the person that was trying to do that and had been doing it for some time. And so that's the purpose of this program tonight and the upcoming ones in the months ahead. And so we're giving her a chance to get her feet wet, to see how the responses are, things that she can talk about in the future, and things that you all might want to hear about. So I'm really, 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 really excited about this, because we know that a lot of our Black Reality Think Tank family, we talk a lot about Africa and the continent, repatriation, all those kinds of ideas, because we have been, you know, inundated with myths about Africa that are totally not true, and you know that. So this is a chance to hear for real. As she said, she's an American. She has her perspective. She came over here with an American, over there with an American perspective. And so we want to know what she ran into. What did she see? What was the problem? You know, both culture, family, government. One last question I want to ask you, and then I'm going to go to our break, and then we'll come back. Are there universities near you or in the area you're in the Cameroon?
The nearest university to me is in an area called Boya, which is a little bit, it's maybe 45 minutes from here. And Boya is a very good university. The only issue with Boya is it's in a conflict zone. So, I don't know. There are students that attend, but it's really in a hot spot. And,
when you say hotspot, what do you mean?
The hotspot, well, you know, there is an ongoing crisis in Cameroon, a civil war of sorts between the Anglophones, the English speakers, and the Francophones, the French speakers. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that drama is coming out of that area.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think in the conversation that you and I had maybe a couple of weeks ago or so, you said something about the Cameroon is also in the area of Nigeria, and Nigeria is a connecting neighbor. Is that correct?
That's correct. Okay. They share a border with each other.
And so, therefore, mm-hmm. you also had the problem with the Islamic group that's creating some very discomfortable things in Nigeria right now. I can't think of the name, simply by name right now, who that is, but you were sharing that with me. Is that still going on as well?
Yes, you're talking about Boko Haram, and that's in that northern region where you have some mm-hmm. of those wildlife reserves way up north. And so, yeah, Nigeria has had a lot of problems with them. They still have not been able to bring Boko Haram under control. And, of course, you know, there's always speculation right. that mm-hmm. there's outside interference. And so, you know, that's one reason why the situation hasn't come under control, because if it were left to maybe Cameroon and Nigeria, it would already be solved.
And the reason I brought it up and just talked about it, because I was trying to understand, you know, a lot of times what the brain trust of an area is and where the brain trust is and what they're creating and what they're developing. And so I know most of the times in a lot of Western countries,
there's outside interference.
Yeah, and the brain trust is centered around universities. And so that's where you find your professional workers and so forth and so on. But anyway, anything you want to say before we go to break, Ms. Pender?
Well, just adding on to your point about the universities, there are some strong universities in Cameroon. And as I mentioned on another broadcast that I was on, it is incumbent upon Cameroonian universities, African universities, who are performing well and who are, you know, putting out students who are doing extraordinary work, especially in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, so that, you know, they can compete in the world market. But if nobody knows that these kids are super bright and they can do things that rival what some of the students are able to do coming from Ivy League universities or Silicon Valley, then no one will ever know.
Okay.
So I think Africa has to do a much better job, you know, promoting their talent and to help reverse that brain drain.
All right, great. Okay, so we are going to take a break. We are talking with Ms. Charmaine Pender from the Cameroon of West Africa. This is her program, Straight No Chaser, and this is sort of like her pilot run to get it together. You know, we talk a lot on the Black Reality Think Tank and other of our programs about the Pan-African spirit. Well, what we're doing tonight is the Pan-African in action, and to see how we can come together and to begin to build. And this program is very critical. This is our major goal and objective, is to bring Pan-Africanism into reality. So we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and I really want you to talk with Mrs. Pender, and you ask your questions and be prepared to do so. She's very knowledgeable about things. She was known her here in Milwaukee. She was one of my students about, how long ago was that, about 20 years, Ms. Pender?
30. I didn't say it, 30.
Okay. But anyway, she was a very bright young lady, and I knew that she would go to something like of this nature. But anyway, let's take a break. We're going to come right back, folks. Please stay on and join so you can talk with Mrs. Pender. And also just begin to make some suggestions how this program can benefit us and really embrace the Pan-African idea.
Good morning. I'm here to talk to you about something that is near and dear to my heart. And what is it something I speak of? Pan-Africanism, of course. What is Pan-Africanism, you may ask? I would like to define it for what I think it really is. That being an ideology that asserts and supports the solidarity of Africans worldwide. It stresses on the fact that our unity as Africans, not just within the continent, but as well as the diaspora, is a vital part to our economic, social, and political progress in terms of the continent's survival. You see, I don't know about you, but I grew up believing that anywhere but Africa was heaven. I thought that being African was one of the worst things that could happen to you in life. And who could blame me? Look at the prevalence of tribalism, imperialism, and corruption within our continent. Now, let me give you a few scenarios that happened within our own country and other countries around the continent. Who would want to grow up living in a country where your leaders are wanted by the ICC? Who would entrust their livelihood to those who use public funds as their personal bank account? And would you want to live in a country that is still ruled by the primitive, divide-and-conquer ideas left to us by the colonialists? I think that is going backwards, and Africa is rising and meant to be moving forward. Before discovering what Pan-Africanism was, I would have told you that anyone who wanted to live in these conditions is crazy. However, now, as a Pan-Africanist, I tell you that I relish the opportunity and the chance to live in any one of these hellholes within the continent. You see, I understand and accept the challenge of uniting Africans and making it the next big thing, not only as a Pan-Africanist, but as a youth as well. If we had a standard of leadership where we were able to hold our leaders accountable for their scandals, iniquities, and irresponsibilities, we would then move forward. From this, I have a question to ask you. Imagine what Africa would be if Africans loved Africa as much as the rest of the world loved its resources. We would not rely on the aid of foreign entities. We would not be the beggars of the world. We would be a force to reckon with. We wouldn't look over at Zimbabwe and Uganda and say, if they can do that, so should we. No. Instead, we would be our brother's keepers. Or there's famine in Ethiopia. We've got some maize right here in Kenya. Why don't you have some? You need some election monitors in Zambia. We've got some right here in Namibia. Why don't you use them for your upcoming election? I wonder, did you guys hear that Rwanda has that new and swift program that enables people to clean the streets? I wonder how that would fare on in Nairobi, Kenya right now. You see, what I'm here to tell you today is that we do not need aid from countries who are only here to feed on our resources and complain about the heat. Now, with that statement being said, I don't want people to believe that I'm here, for lack of a better word, to take a dump on foreign relations between African countries and countries outside of this great continent that we live in today. What I am here to say is that if we started to look within ourselves for ideas, innovations, and ways to push forward the continent, wouldn't we have solutions that the rest of the world is looking for? Pan-Africanism begins by teaching us some of the amazing things that our ancestors have done. It begins by teaching us that Africa is not a wasteland like we are led to believe it is. It teaches us of our ancestors, such as Tom Mboya, Kwame Nkrumah, Thomas Sankara. It teaches us of the amazing things that these Pan-Africanist pioneers, if you will, have done. It teaches us of the great things that we continue to do. Pan-Africanism is all about solidarity and unity. It is the idea of the Queen Zinga of Angola. It is the idea of the Ashanti in Ghana. It is the idea of the Zulu of South Africa. It is the idea of the pyramids in Egypt and Sudan. It is the idea of M-Pesa in Kenya, all compiled and converging into one thing, and that thing, of course, being Pan-Africanism. Now, let's talk about the media for a second. Though the media does play a vital role in our lives, some would say that they virtually perpetuate some of the heavy stereotypes that are thought about Africans today. Don't get me wrong, politicians do play a major role in why Africa is seen as what it is today. Now, by a show of hands here, how many people have traveled to another country and been asked some ridiculous question because of being African or having African descent? Believe me, I know the feeling as well. You see, as an African, I want to tell you the cold, hard truth that tribalism is our only authentic identity. Take, for example, the 2007 post-election violence that arose in Kenya because of corruption and tribalism. A study conducted by Stephen Keveridge in 2008 showed that 58% of Kenyans didn't even know that their parties had a manifesto. Now, is that to say that we as Kenyans cast our votes primarily because of the candidate's charisma? Was it the candidate's wealth? Was it the candidate's looks? No. It was because we have been conditioned to think that we have to make a choice based on ethnicity. I'm not here to say that you shouldn't be proud of your tribe, your culture, or your history. But what I am here to say is Pan-Africanism teaches us about solidarity. It teaches us about unity. It teaches us about patriotism. Let me give you a little history here about imperialism. You see, imperialism was Africa's and Asia's 3-century-long fight for foreign dominance. It was dependent on dismantling national unity and replacing it with ethnic intolerance, which is what we see today. The scars of this are felt now more than ever, with phrases such as, I am Yoruba, or I am Shona, or I am Kikuyu, or I am Luo, or I am Aluya, becoming more and more inseparable each and every day. Like I said, I am not here to say that you should not be proud of your culture, your history, or where you are from. In fact, Pan-Africanism encourages exactly that. You should be proud. You should be happy. But what I am saying is, when a candidate or a person's main selling point is his ethnicity rather than his core values, his principles as a man, won't that person have a tendency towards an abuse of power or corruption? What I am here to tell you today is we can do this without the divide and conquer. We can do this without ethnic barriers. We can do this without ethnic intolerance. We can do this without hate speech. Patriotism has no party. Patriotism sees no gender. Patriotism sees no race. Patriotism sees no tribe. What I am saying today, ladies and gentlemen, is you should stick to one political party. You should be proud of where you're from. But what I am saying is that we can do this without the divide and conquer, and we can do this the right way. We can do this the Pan-African way. Thank you.
Time for an awakening media lineup. All About Times or Eastern Standard. On Mondays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspective with host Brother Oshi. On Monday evenings from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds with host Brother Jihad Ahmed. On Monday evenings from 8 to 9 p.m., Black Therapy Central with hosts Dr. Mawaya Cambone and Sister Nataki Cambone. on Monday evenings from 9 to 10 p.m. on the first and third Mondays of each month. Conversation Reparations. Conversation Reparations. On Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers. On Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives with host Brother Ocean. On Fridays, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives with host Brother Ocean. From 8 to 10 p.m. on Friday evenings, Time for an Awakening with host Brother Elliot Booker and his co-host Brother Richard. On Saturdays, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Black Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And at 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Saturday evening, the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with host Dr. Janine James, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister D.D. Conley. And on Sunday, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Time for an Awakening, host Brother Elliot and his co-host Brother Richard. These are our lineup times. We thank you for your patronage, and please, by all means, check us out.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hoteps, sisters and brothers, we are back. We are in the motherland, and we are talking today with Sister Charmaine Penda. This is going to be her program on a regular basis, hopefully on Thursdays. She's calling it Straight No Chaser, as we talk about the continent and the possibilities. This is Pan-Africanism Live. We are bringing Pan-Africanism home. So, Ms. Penda, would you like for me to open the line up now? Or do you have some other things you want to say before we do that?
Get the conversation going.
I'm sorry. Say that again. Your mic wasn't on.
If there are callers, let us get the conversation going. Yes. Open the phone line.
All right. Let's go. Let's start. Brother Lush, how you doing tonight, Brother Lush?
Fine. Good evening, Dr. Rogers, and good evening to your guests. May I have your name again?
Charmaine.
My name is Charmian.
Charmian,
but you can call me Charm.
Charm. Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you so very much. And all the best to you in your future endeavors with the program.
Thank you.
You know, being on this side of the pond, I've only done the reading and the exposure, et cetera. I've had my share of coming in contact with those of African descent, those who are African here in this country. I'm just curious to know, what are the relationships between us here in America and those Africans in Africa? Is it a good, bad, or indifferent? Is there a tolerance level that you reach? I'm just kind of curious.
Right. That's a very good question, and I know exactly where you're coming from. You know, honestly, in Cameroon, right, if we're taking it from this side, we are so few. We are so few. I mean, I know maybe four other sisters in Cameroon. I mean, sisters like, you know, Black American women who live in Cameroon. And we all happen to be married to Cameroonians. So, you know, there's going to be a natural affinity, right, on the Cameroonian side, because we're married to one of their brothers, and we have children with one of their brothers. So they kind of just take us in. Now, if this was more of an isolated situation where you didn't have those bloodlines and that kinship, it might be a little bit different. I think the relationships are positive. I really do. But I also believe that we have a lot of preconceived notions about each other. And that's why I was saying maybe through young people we can start to dispel the myths that we hold about each other. You know,
sure.
Because it's not totally positive. It's not, because we haven't really engaged properly with each other. We usually see or meet Africans on college campuses or at a distance. But they don't really come into the Black community. They're usually on the outside looking in and tending to, you know, just kind of keep to themselves. So they're very insular culturally as well. And this is something that I would like to see break up a little bit, because there's so much that we can learn from each other. Really, there's so much. You know, and Africa's destiny is linked to our destiny. Our destiny is linked to Africa's destiny. And for some reason, we believe that we don't have to really look after each other's issues, but we do.
Okay.
We do.
Okay.
We have a common history. We have a common destiny. And so, but it needs to be taught. It needs to be said, and it needs to be practiced. Otherwise, you know, the same kind of doing business as usual will continue, and we'll kind of bury our heads in the sand and not really see each other and appreciate. And, you know, let me add this. For example, and I'm going to tell you where it can be a really negative experience. So we were watching the George Floyd incident play out on TV. We were glued to CNN, right? And all of the stories were coming forth, and they were interviewing all of these people from all different walks of life, you know, poor people, middle-class people, rich people, out-of-sight rich people, who were all saying, Black people, who were all saying, yeah, you know, I've experienced this trauma, and it is unbearable. And so my husband said, wow, I get it now. I see what you mean. I thought you were just a Black Panther. I said, oh, really? You get it now. Oh, okay. So you thought I was exaggerating the indignities that our people have been through for the last 400 years. You know, so it took that kind of in your face.
Ms. Pender, you might. Are you there?
Okay.
Ms. Pender, you there? Yeah, this happens. It happens a lot. So we can keep moving, and she'll come back on in a minute. If you hear me, Ms. Pender, we can't hear you. So you might have to cut it off and come back on again. But go right on, Brother
Dr. Rogers.
Yes.
Dr. Rogers, if I may, just real quickly, too. I won't be able to stay the full duration of the program because of another commitment. I would love to be able to establish connections with her.
Okay.
And one of the other questions I was getting ready to lead to, because Cameroon is in a unique kind of position as it pertains to geography. I mean, you have Nigeria, mm-hmm. you have the Central Republic of Africa, you've got Gabon, and the Atlantic Ocean, et cetera. So what about the interactions between Cameroonians and Nigerians, or those from Chad and Niger and et cetera, et cetera? What are relationships like amongst them there? So that's where I was also going to.
And I had talked to her about it, and I don't have a complete picture of it, but I know there's economic interaction, a lot of economic interaction. Now, in terms of cultural and ethnic interaction and how they feel about things like that, I'm not quite sure. I know just like anywhere, sports ties people together. The soccer is a big sport there, as she said, and they do play the Nigerians and, you know, those neighboring countries a lot. But that's, and so I make sure when she comes back, I will see if we can resist that
very good
question. Thank you so much, Brother Lush.
Yeah, and sure. And if you could text me or email her, I would love to have that.
Yeah, she definitely said she was going to give her email out, and I'll make sure you get that. Ms. Pendant, are you back on yet? Do you hear me? Because we don't hear you at all. And this is one of our major drawbacks. The technology is a lot different there, and I have been talking to her on other occasions, and we blank right off, and so she'll have to cut up and come back on. So please bear with us. Yeah. She will come on back in just a few minutes. And Ms. Pendy, if you do hear me, you're going to probably have to turn off your phone and come back on. Okay. As we wait for her to come back on, let me just mention real quickly again, sort of reiterate the whole idea of this initiative and this program again was to begin to sort of look at putting Pan-Africanism in action. With us being able to talk, we have another young lady from the Cameroon that lives in the Cameroon that's also from the States, and she actually runs a private school, African-centered private school. She was on one of our programs before, and her name is Ms. Shamney. I think I'm pronouncing that right, I believe. And nonetheless, she wants to come on. She's going to talk a little bit about that process and how she is moving forward with that. And these are Cameroonian children that are going to the school. As she said, the French influence is still there, but there are attempts to push that aside and become more traditional African, if possible. And I'd like to. We're going to have her on. I know she's planning to bring her on and talk with her a little bit and let her explain her school. And then obviously there's the economic part that we want to talk about, the trading between America and Africa, what the possibilities are there. It is very good. It is open. The African Union and some of the other groups now that are being formed, pushing that agenda. And so people are all tied together, and that's a very good thing as well. The Time for an Awakening Network actually has a program that they do coming directly from Ghana, the brother Dr. Cambone, which is not the one that does the thing, but this is her son. He has a program that comes out of Ghana, and he does lectures and so forth about the continent. So there's a movement here. There's some energy to do that. On top of what has already been done in the past by people like Randall Robertson in his Trans-Africa movement that he did. And then our dear brother, Brother Ron Brown, and he met a fate as he was getting aggressive about letting African business and doing business with Africa in the country among other African-Americans. So those are the kinds of things. So let's hope Ms. Pender can come back on very soon. And do that. Let me go. Neither of us, we can still talk. We always, we know how it is. We always kick it with each other real good. Sister Yan, you got anything to add? And hopefully while we're waiting for Ms. Pender to log back on.
I do. Greetings, brothers and sisters. How's everybody?
All right.
What Brother Lush brought up was a part of what I wanted to address. And I'm sure it's on most of our minds. I'm going to put out two questions that I have for Sister Penda if she gets back on. One is the boarding schools that she talked about that where African youth are sent, if they are run by Europeans or by Africans.
The boarding school?
When you send your child away to the colonizer, they're going to get the colonizer's so-called education. And my understanding from having many African friends that they get the education, but the colonized mind, they get that too.
Yes, indeed.
And so then they come back, and then they become some of the leaders that everybody, that don't look out for the average African, wherever, in whatever part of the continent. And the same goes for universities. Mm-hmm. You know, I have learned that there are universities in France, one place I know, and the U.S., that are recruiting the brilliant young Africans to come and be trained by the colonizers.
Right,
and these universities are specifically for the training of African leaders to go back and do the colonizers' bidding. And that's why you have, everybody's complaining about the African leaders. Well, they've been trained to do what they're doing. And it's very important that we know that.
Right. That's right.
Because we, you know, as African people, we tend to trust the enemy. You know, no matter what they do to us, we turn back around and trust them. Like, no, we can't do none of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope she can hear this, because I'd like for her to address this. Also, I do hear a beautiful thing that I'm hearing. More and more brothers and sisters from the continent are waking up.
Yes.
And they're speaking out. And they're talking about Pan-Africanism. And so that's a beautiful thing. I've seen the Nation of Islam, you know, some brothers and sisters joining the Nation of Islam. And they've got this young brother that kind of, that's like another Malcolm out there.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That's the beauty of it. The last thing I want to mention is what Brother Lush talked about. In my experience in dealing with Africans, the sister talked about that they're kind of not there, but our brothers and sisters tend to be a little insular. That is an issue that we have to address, like, right in our faces. We've got to address that.
Yes.
Because we have been pitted against each other, just like we've been pitted against each other here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Europe, the Caucasians have pitted Africans, continental Africans, against those of us that were born here. And as usual, they're very efficient, you know, when they're doing demon stuff. And so I have many, many African friends from the continent, and I found out that many Africans actually, when they come from the motherland, they come to the South. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But the South has a large population of Africans, and I know people from Ghana, from Sierra Leone,
that's true.
You know, Togo, many places. And yes, very insular. And as I try to draw them out and talk to them, it's difficult. One-on-one is beautiful, but when I try to get them in the community, there's a very strong reluctance, and it is because of the messages that they've gotten and the brainwashing from the Caucasian that told them that we're these thieves and we're horrible people who won't work and all this nonsense. And then they're telling Africans, you know, continental Africans, that they're better than us because they're here to work and they have, you know, they're pursuing education. And they're just doing a lot of this divide and conquer.
Yes,
so
yes.
That has to be addressed because, and I'll finish with this.
Yeah.
What if we don't address this with national, international conversations, Pan-Africanist conversations amongst ourselves, we are going to bring many of us that want to locate to Africa, relocate to Africa, we will bring that Eurocentric mindset.
Yes, we will. Mm-hmm.
And many Africans are already brainwashed with the Eurocentric Christianity, which has done a terrible, terrible things in African culture.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to, ask her, how far Christianity had gotten into the Cameroon.
It's bad in so many places, as you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we got to clean up.
We got
to clean up some stuff so that we can begin to form these alliances, because that's been, in my experience in organizing for years,
mm-hmm.
that's been a major challenge, is getting our African brothers and sisters to come out to our meetings and our planning sessions. They won't come.
Uh-huh. That's right. Yep. That's exactly right. So, yeah, we do.
We got to find a way to get them.
We got to break that yoke.
Yes.
That the colonizer has still. It's still there. Because, you know, in a lot of cases, they send, a lot of the African countries send their brightest to the Americas to be trained. And I've always struggled with that. You know, what is it, you know, that they can get here that they can't get there? You know, kind of thing. There's a group, Brother Lance, that had this Thursday program previously, had a group on called the African Brain Bank. and this was a movement. Are you involved with the Brain Bank, Sister Ayan?
I've listened to some of the I've been privy to some of the a couple of the conference calls.
Right.
And so I'm familiar with what they're attempting to do. I do believe, though, you know, back to what I'm saying, that organization and others have to deal with this pitting us against each other.
Exactly.
That's still
right.
An issue.
And then
that is within different organizations.
Exactly.
Yes.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and the Brain Bank is attempting to try to keep the talent of Africa in Africa and also draw people who here in the States, African Americans, to Africa with their skills and their knowledge and, you know, that they've gotten from their degrees and come to Africa. Because, like, for instance, right now, here's a perfect example. The technology is not at its best yet. They need a brain trust, people that can pull together strong technology companies. Apple doesn't have to be the major source to help run technology in Africa, or Verizon, or AT&T. Why can't an African country do that? But they would obviously need to have some interest or some understanding of the process and the technology of doing it globally like this, and how to make that work. But I've heard that from several folk that I know from Africa. That's a big problem, is this technology. And things like when it rains or the weather gets different, it'll knock off these telephones and the lights go out and they stay out a long time. And I think this is what's happened with Ms. Pender. Several times all of the electricity in the town will go out and it'll stay off for 5-6 hours and then it'll come back on. And I think this may have been a lot of times because of the rain. It may be in the rainy season, they really catch it. So that's the kind of feeding that we need to have. So the opportunity, I see it as an opportunity for our young people to go down and be able to start from scratch. We need some George Washington Carvers down in Africa. We need some of those.
Yes.
Yeah. Brother Marcus.
Okay. I don't know if you have other people to go to.
Okay. Brother Marcus, I want to ask you, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, good brother.
Good. Any thoughts you had about this, the African returning?
Yes, well, you know, right near where that Sister Charmin is broadcasting from, Cameroon, that coastal area is a lot of natural gas is there.
Mm.
And that place is already tapped. They already tapped that place off in India, so the natural gas is accessible. So, you know, we here have the technology that could go into right here in Cameroon and electrify the whole area.
Right.
Bring electricity to the entire area. See, natural, because you have the source already, you have the gas. So you bring in the technology, you bring in your power plants. You know, that's a business there that we can do, you know, we can start there. Because we have the brain trust here. The thing is how we get this African here to see that.
Right.
And look, you can do that too. You can go and set up a power plant here and electrify, because we're going to need electricity to have heavy industry.
Right.
You can't power heavy industry with the solar and wind turbine. You need that heavy, you know. So
yeah,
that's
right.
But what this sister is doing is pivotal, is vital. What is doing, that's why the Muslim go cut it off. He makes sure he said, no, you know what, you didn't hear that. No, bam, and he cut it. See, but that is the solution. She's our eyes and ears here. We are their eyes and ears here. We trade together and develop economically. We pull ourselves up by our bootstraps.
Right. Right. There we go.
Anyway, good brother.
Now we talk. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Brother Timothy, you ready to go home to the homeland? Are you ready to get there? You got your
brother, I can't wait, brother, you know. if this coronavirus wasn't around, I think I would catch the next flight. People tell me the best time to go if you can is now because the airlines have the best deals out.
All right.
So, yeah, but, yeah, I can't wait. I'm going to say this to you, that the relationship with the Africans at Lincoln University was really good. And she has a point that's why we were connected, really. They were in the fraternal order at Lincoln. Mm-hmm. They were in the social clubs.
That's right. Lincoln had a big community of Africans, correct?
Nigeria, man. Oh,
okay.
My God.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, they gave some of the best parties, you know. They had a little cash, and I used to say, best parties, man. They had their cash, you know. We treated each other like gold. I mean, we talked about them with their experience in Africa, and they talked about us with our experience in America.
Mm-hmm.
And in graduate school, it made me more connected that I had the experience of them at Lincoln. And I had a course on international literature.
Okay.
And one of my favorite writers was Achebe, Things Fall Apart.
Yeah, China Achebe. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Julio Cuenca, who wrote the book called Interpreters.
Mm-hmm.
And a book that I read called by Margaret Lawrence called The Rain Child.
Mm-hmm.
And my experience was that, you know, that they wrestle with what we wrestle with here, that we don't speak our mother tongue. It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That they want to be more connected to the colonizer. Not all of them. Like, we want to be connected with integration here.
Right.
Right. And then the piece of economics. The economics with the education, see?
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
the key. See, you know, yeah, there are resources over there, but it's tied up. Somebody else has our resources. But we have to learn economically how to grab a hold of business and resources.
Yes, we
In
do.
Other words,
yes,
they
we
tell
do.
Me a big, large Chinese merchants are in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Before it was Indians for India. Now it's the Chinese. And they started to integrate with Africans. Interesting.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's an interesting thing. And I guess, Dr. Rogers, the quicker I can get there, the better it is, because I was more conscious. I'm more conscious now than I was at 18, 19, and 20.
Right.
But we had a good. And let me tell you something about them when it came to studying. They would have their books in the cafeterias when they came
mm-hmm.
to Lincoln. They always had, this is the truth, they had some of the best averages.
Yeah, you know, I've always heard Lincoln University nurtured that. That was a relationship that they have. And
yeah.
A lot of that was in Nkrumah. Now, because, you know, Nkrumah was in Lincoln, you know, from...
Not only in Nkrumah, but not in Ezekiel. See, Ezekiel was Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
Nkrumah, too, but Ezekiel. They love Zeke.
Yeah.
And, you know, you had that experience because they were undergraduate. And you got to remember, early in Lincoln days, it was divinity degrees.
Right.
And you have to remember this, that
yep.
Nkrumah, being around Garvey, when he went back to Africa, he said Africa must unite. See,
mm-hmm.
that's the relationship of us exchanging from a number and even dual citizenship.
What is Lincoln? United Methodist?
It was started by Presbyterians.
Oh, Presbyterians. Okay. All right.
Started by Presbyterians.
Yeah. And
now, and you got to remember, wait a minute, it was started by Presbyterians. But you got to remember who idea it was, okay?
Okay.
It was two brothers. The two brothers.
That's right.
Who started Lincoln, and they went to the right, and they went to the Presbyterian Church to help them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Right. So, Lincoln has an African beginning, and it was always black. I mean, I'm not knocking Howard. Howard was always integrated with white folks from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Lincoln was black. Probably
mm-hmm.
like Morehouse was black,
mm-hmm.
and Clark was black. You see what I'm saying? So we take pride.
Yeah. As
a matter of fact, we have a good African population there. The last graduation I went to.
But like Sister Yan said, Sister Barisa, Mister Yan said, and this is, you have to be mindful of this, is a lot of this is missionary stuff. This is all of these, you know, unfortunately, those black colleges were
right.
a lot of missionary right. stuff, and they obviously were controlled because you remember when Du Bois went to Clark Atlanta,
right.
The United Methodists ran him out because they didn't want him down there talking all that black stuff. And
wow.
they didn't like that, and they shut him down. He had to leave. Clark Atlanta,
right.
because of that, because of his
right
work that he was trying to do.
Right.
So, yeah, that's very,
very
clear.
Good. So you remember, it was the Amos brothers who started Lincoln University through the Presbyterian Church. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, the richness of HBCU and how we connect it. And I'm going to tell you something. You got to remember this, that when George Washington Carver wound up at Tuskegee in Alabama, that he was not accepted at Lincoln University. I said, it would have been great to have a Carver at
right.
Lincoln.
Right.
And, right. And to have went to Booker T. Washington and Booker T.'s Washington relationship with Africa.
Mm-hmm.
See, we got to get into what people's relationship was to Africa. What was Nkrumah's relationship to Africa and Zekeway while he was there? And the
right.
Africans make them want to come to Lincoln. The first they talk about is Zeke. They love Zeke. They talk about Nkrumah.
Yeah.
And that's important. That connection right there, young with me.
Yeah.
18, 19, 20, it never went nowhere. So we had people that come from the continent and they come on homecoming. We
mm-hmm.
connect.
Right.
We go back and forth. So, and they became different things there. And they're doing what they can do.
Right.
And we're doing the best we can with colonization, man. What we have here, with integration, they got colonization. We
okay.
got to defeat this enemy, man, and unite.
Okay.
Like Kumis and like Garvey said.
Mm-hmm.
We got to unite.
Okay. All right, Brother Kwazi, you want to go to Africa with me?
You know I do.
Oh, you don't want to go to Africa with me? Shame on you.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I got to get my passport in order.
Oh, you do want to go. You do want to go to Africa. Okay. That's what you
said. Yes, yeah. Definitely. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of friends that go back and forth to Africa just doing trade. So they have that dual citizenship.
Okay.
And, you know, okay. Like the sister was talking earlier, you know, and I think a few people mentioned it, and Brother Timothy mentioned it, you know, about having that language.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's just so universal for us to speak our native tongue and speaking this European stuff. Well, I mean, it's just driving me nuts. So I got to learn my Swahili and, you know, so I can move forward and teach and
yeah.
preach to our people, you know.
Right, right. Yeah, you're right.
That is powerful for us to have a conversation that they don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know, and you know, and so many of them, you know, that's what they do when you know they, you know, the Indians can do that, you know, the Asians and so forth, and you know, and we were stolen and all of that stripped from us. But when they came here, they at least had that their native tongue and stuff.
Right.
So
right.
It's a struggle for us.
It is. We were talking with Ms. Charmaine Pender from the Cameroon, but the technology situation here changed. I think she may be having some challenges there. It happens. She did indicate to me in the beginning when we started planning this that it does happen a lot. So she was going to try to find a way to sort of get around it, but obviously it didn't work. We were practicing all day and testing it out all day, and everything was fine. And then we got into the conversation, and this is what happened. So I do apologize for that. I'm sure she will be back again. Not quite sure what has happened, but hopefully she will get a chance to come back before we go off. Let me ask you something, Sister Yon. I know you and I have, you know, we talk about this Pan-African thing out there. What were some things you would like to see her do on this program as in the episodes coming up? What kind of things would you be interested in seeing?
Related to what I said earlier, developing, I don't know if I said this specifically, but developing relationships with
okay.
each other.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't, working together,
mm-hmm.
Making money, you know, working on economics and whatnot, we have got to have relationship with each other where we trust each other.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause some of us are coming into this thing. I know men, like I said, there are many people who are working on, you know, going back to Africa and building in Africa. But they're having a capitalist, not just a colonized mind, but a capitalistic
mm-hmm.
mind.
And
yeah. I want to hear her talk about capitalism because we can't bring
the
ways. I do
too. I want to hear that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we can't bring the ways of a destructive system
right.
to Africa. And the other thing I want to say, Doc, so I don't forget, because I forgot to say it earlier, you know, we can't act like, I'm not saying anybody's doing this, but we can't act like Africans don't have the capacity to build.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's true.
Like we're the only ones that can come and build. There was an article a while back about some young teenagers that made some kind of invention using urine. I don't know if you remember that.
I saw something like that. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, before the Europeans, you know, invaded, we did plenty.
Right.
And so we know how to do for ourselves. Mm-hmm. Just got to get that grip, that, you know, Eurocentric grip. Get them out. And Chinese, over, get them out. Because we have the creativity. We have the brilliance. And we got to let, in our communication with our African brothers and sisters, let them know that we know that.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't want to approach them saying, oh, we're coming to help you with, you know, so-and-so. They don't need help.
Right.
They have the brilliance.
Yeah, they got the land. Definitely got the land. You know, some of the things, I've read some
and
things.
Real quick, Doc, just can you imagine, the inventions that we made here in America, Africans in America, right? The toilet, ironing board, all those things that we were never taught. Can you imagine what Africans in the motherland have invented that mm-hmm. they were never taught?
Good point. Good point. Very good point. You know, we could very clearly, as I've been reading, there's a whole innovative area in terms of, you know, the possibility of medicinal development. Because, as you know, the Sudan, and in that region of the Sudan, is one of the largest pharmaceutical laboratories in the world, and China has it. China is in the Sudan area, you know, dealing with the raw material base that's there, located in that area, and they're using it in building a stronger pharmaceutical industry there. And there's a lot of the cures for some of the diseases. Very well, the answers may lie in the motherland. And I'm sure there's a ton of information on that. As well, but very clearly, that's a possibility. And I think this is Dr. James. Dr. James, is that you on the line?
It is.
Oh, good, great. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, and I'm happy to hear the conversation. And I just would like to, in continuation of what we're talking about,
yes,
to encourage people to visit various parts of Africa. I've visited Nigeria,
okay,
and I've visited Ghana. In fact, I had family who basically relocated there, and there are large collections of American blacks who have come to live there or to do business there. And I'm always fascinated whenever I hear a conversation about Africa, and I'm asking myself, is this someone who's ever been to Africa who's speaking or who has not been there?
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. I can share with you the first time that I went to Nigeria, and I was there for about 2 weeks during the Christmas holidays, and I found and I was staying in Lagos, and I found that there were places that reminded me of visiting family in Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
and then I found that I was in places that reminded me of New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a friend who was from Nigeria, and he said that many times people would ask him about what it was like living in Nigeria, and he was a jokester, and sometimes people would say, well, do you live in a treehouse? And he'd say, oh, yes. And they said, well, how do you get into the tree? He said, well, I take the elevator, of course. and these were very real kinds of experiences that we had, and I found myself upon my return feeling very betrayed from a historical standpoint to have an idea that that Africa was not developed, was not without resources. I watched the some of the soap operas equivalent that they had, and I didn't understand the language, but soap opera is a soap opera. Mm-hmm. And you can follow pretty much along what was going on.
Right.
And the nightly news, and going to a resort. But it was very diverse in terms of the places that you would see. So I think people have to make their own decision.
Distinction, right.
And the only way they can do that is they've got to visit.
Mm-hmm. And, let me ask you, is there any kind of innovative research that's being done, from that medicinal reign of things in Africa? I've been reading a lot about that, and particularly on those coastal areas, in those waters, they are finding things that are making excellent serum to do certain kinds of medical work. Do you have any information on that? And I know, in your area, you obviously deal with motherhood and childbirth, but is there anything that you've read or know about?
Well, I was just speaking to a young physician who I have been a mentor for many years, who's from Nigeria.
Okay.
And I asked him some questions recently about the medication area, and he said that there are a lot of people who are medicine men, so to speak, in terms of their working with medicinal items. He said the difficulty, however, is that they have not taken it to a level of the research to determine how much of a particular substance needs to be used for a particular purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And these are some things where we could begin to have some collaboration in terms of doing the research. So you'll hear someone that'll say, this particular substance has these particular properties, but then the question you have to ask is, well, how much?
Mm-hmm.
Too much, too little. So I think that there is room for this collaboration.
Yes.
And then speaking about people coming from Africa to be trained, and there are a number of physicians that I'm familiar with who begin their training actually in African medical schools, and then as they get higher into the training, they will seek going to England or to the U.S. for the training. But I think that ultimately they have been brainwashed as we have been brainwashed here.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the Africans have said that they feel that this doctor is more qualified by having trained in the U.S. But I think when it gets down to it, those individuals are very capable.
Interesting.
And as we begin to recognize that it's not all as cracked up to be here, and we could probably get as good a training in the African medical schools as we could if people weren't brainwashed.
Interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. I often wonder that because I know that that's always a very big area, I guess, because of the climatic conditions, the quality of the water and things like that happens, and but I think that's both a plus and minus area there. I was reading something, though, that was very, very interesting, and it really made me want to go further and look at the research, is that over on the eastern side of Africa, and down in the Mozambique area, right across that Mozambique channel, is Madagascar, and on Madagascar sits right in the middle of the Indian Ocean, and the channel in the Indian Ocean. So on the Indian Ocean side, The article was saying how the Indonesians have gone in and actually taken over that, and there are resources there that have the potential of creating very powerful medicinal products that, you know, everybody else is struggling to get hold of. And but the Indonesians won't let anybody in there, obviously, without, you know, a war or a fight. But they are definitely...
Dr. Rogers?
Oh, there you are. Oh, my goodness. We were trying to hold it up. Unfortunately, now we only got about 4 minutes. So, listen, I'm going to turn it over to you unless you kind of close out. You've had a wonderful conversation, though. Go right ahead.
Oh, I'm so sorry about that. So, you see, folks, this is one of the perils of living in Africa.
Okay.
Well, you know, consistent service. It's just really, really, really erratic. I mean, you can buy all the electric groups that you want, but sometimes if a storm comes through, you will lose power. You will lose your internet connection, and it really is unfortunate. I'm sorry that I was off for 40 minutes or so.
That's okay.
And I've been calling and calling and calling, but I couldn't get through. But anyway, 3 minutes left.
Yep.
I think the last question was, what should people look for, or what do they need to think about when they want to immigrate? And I want to just say that let's just go straight to business. There are opportunities here, lots of opportunities for business in industries such as mining, agriculture, but particularly in services. So anything related to cosmetics and beauty, anything related to retail, anything that will help the agricultural industry, for example. You know, this is still kind of a cash crop society, so any kind of technology or tools, financing, all of those things are very helpful. And that's a way that a person can generate revenue once you're here. Now, you may leave the United States with a sizable savings, but that savings will deplete rather rapidly, so you have to have a way to generate income. And whatever skills or talents that you have, yes, of course, those will be helpful to you, but you're still going to have to, you know, on the ground, try to figure out how you can fit in and be really super competitive, right? Because there are so many other people that are competing for the same resources, and so that you're able to sustain your lifestyle. Because what happens is you come here and you think you want to live the same kind of lifestyle that you lived in the United States, and that's perfectly fine, except when you come into converting the currency, right? It's called the purchasing power parity, or the Big Mac Index. So you say $1 equals $500. It's really more like 567, but just for a round number, $1 equals 500 Cameroonian francs. So that means if I have, you know, $5,000, I would have 250,000 Cameroonian French francs. Yeah, you would have 250,000 Cameroonian French francs, but that 250,000 French francs is not the same as $250,000. So you have to think about what your cost of living is, what can you actually live without, because after being here for a while, you know, you will start to really eliminate and, you know, kind of do away with, learn to live without some of those conveniences that you're used to living with, because they cost too much on this side, unless you're loading up your suitcase with hot sauce like I used to do when I first came here, because I'm that type of chick.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
Eventually that's going to play out, because, I mean, really, are you going to...
Well, let me, it's 8 o'clock already, and they're going to just going to cut off on the internet side. Real quickly, though, what are you thinking about doing in the future coming up?
As far as the program? As far as the program, what I would like to do is bring on some guests that are here so people can get a different perspective from mine and ask questions and hear about their experience and, you know, where they're coming from and how they're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be beneficial for the audience.
Okay. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it has ended. Those that were on the internet are already off. But for those of you who are still on the line, we really appreciate it. I'm so sorry about this inconvenience, but as Ms. Fender said, it's just a part of the programming. So next time, we're kind of trying to work on some ways that we can get around that, use some alternative methods. That's one of the things that we were considering. But anyway, thank all of you so much. We'll see you on Tuesday with the regular Black Reality Think Tank program, and we'll keep you abreast. and update it to when Ms. Pender will start her regular broadcasting with us. Have a wonderful night, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you. Good night.